Hey guys, welcome back to Unleashed. I'm Brent Henderson. With me is Kevin Huff. And remember, we are the resistance. Today's going to be a... we're sitting in an air-conditioned office. Thank God.
Praise the Lord for air conditioning.
Summers you can remember?
Well, believe it or not, I did my research this morning. Because I always tell people, when I moved here, the data said we've only averaged 10 days per year of 90-plus degree weather. So I looked it up, and it's still 13.8. I think I was wrong then. It's 13.8 over like the last 80 years or something. So we rarely actually go over 90. But the humidity is absurd.
Yeah, I've been looking at my app, you know, and it'll say 89, 88, 89, 88. But then you go to the real field, it's anywhere from like 95. Yeah. And the state fair yesterday, the real field on the index was 102. But I don't know what it would have been on the blacktop.
That's the heat index, right, that you're talking
about? Yeah. Like the Indy 500, they'll measure the track temperature, and it's way up there. You're like 120 or some degrees. I mean, it's hot. Oof. Yeah, you could have fried an egg. It was hot.
Well, I have one comment on last week's episode, our first one that we have done as a relaunch together, if you will.
Yes.
Well, one of us is clearly a loudmouth. And one of us is not. So hopefully this week, loudmouth over here got myself fixed.
Well, I took this thing back to edit the podcast, and I was too far off my mic. My mic at home when I'm doing my podcast from there, I'm further away because I get too much of a pop. Yeah. I don't really get that on here, so I just had to get used to it. So,
or I was a loudmouth. One of those two things.
one of the two.
Maybe a combination of both.
But yeah, so the state fair, we went to see Chris Tomlin. That was our weekend. We went down and saw him last night. I always love seeing him. He is a worship leader. It's, you know, he's incredibly talented as a singer, player, writer, but he doesn't make it about him. He makes it about the people and about God and just invites you in. It was incredible.
Yeah. Great guy for sure. Awesome music.
What'd you do this weekend?
Well, my wife and I went to Pickle Con. And
was it put on by Dill?
Yeah, it was a big deal, that's for sure.
Right.
That's a pickleball convention, for those of you not completely familiar with that nomenclature. My wife and I are into pickleball pretty big. We've got our own pickleball business, and it was a great opportunity for us to get to know people, meet people, connect with potential sponsors, vendors, etc. Great success.
I've never played pickleball. Do you use like a big dill pickle?
Yeah.
Is that what you use?
Yeah, you do. Okay. The rest of us get to use a paddle.
You'll have paddles.
It's like a big ping pong paddle.
Yeah, I've never played to this day.
Yeah, well.
You got a business and I've never played.
You are among almost a minority. Not really, but it's getting there. We've grown 40% again this last year in terms of the number of players in the U.S. Estimates are well over 50 to 60 million Americans have played pickleball.
Really? Now, I take that back. In my driveway, our youngest drew a little, you know, mini pickleball thing. And she had, I think we went to Marshall's and she bought little cheap paddles, a little, you know, the little ball. And she was teaching me, what's it called in the kitchen? What's that?
Dinking.
Dinking.
Just hitting it really soft, barely over the net.
Yeah, well, we did a lot of that because it was such a small area.
Yeah, well, that's smart.
It's fun. She loved it.
You ding it too high, I'll give you a new tattoo.
You know, I played tennis. I mean, I played tennis in high school and college and... But I just kind of put that... last year, she wanted to play on the tennis team, and so she never had seen I played, so I took her out. And it didn't take long to get back what I...
No.
I mean, it had been 20 years since I had played last.
You know, the studies say that the number one sport for longevity is a racket sport.
Really?
Number one.
I did not know that.
Tennis, racquetball, badminton, pickleball.
So if I run a racket, it'll lengthen my...
Yeah, that's the one.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, it was funny. Here she was. She was like 15, and she's her first year. And I was like, hey, I'm getting this back, and I'm crushing these serves.
Ripping
and
she's the
like ducking and spinning, and she's like, stop.
This is a kick serve. Whack.
But it was great. You know, she, you know, they, in tennis, they taught her all the stretching exercises. So I went through all those with her, and I was just remembering being able to slow down, take my time to learn. We, in this generation, we're like, we want to get it now. You know, whether you're going to AI or whatever you're doing, there's something to be said sometimes for things that can help speed the process. But in the end, I think it's, when I think about my life being formed, it wasn't when I was going fast. It was when I was taking my time.
I know you're ahead here, and I don't like it because I like to shove a gallon in a quart jar whenever I can.
That is you.
That is me.
But yeah, you're like, I got six meetings before noon, but I should make it.
Yeah, you know? I'll be there right on time.
Gosh.
Well,
yeah, my appointment this morning was with my doctor, and he's like, Well, any new things to tell me about? I said, no, not really. Okay, we'll see you in 6 months.
Perfect.
I mean, it was like, okay, I'll take that.
Yeah.
No, he's great. He sits down with me and talks through issues.
He must really trust you.
I trust him. You know, when I've sometimes gone in and said, man, I'm either struggling with sleep or, you know, some emotional things will be bugging me, you know, for grief or whatever, he will honestly always take his time to sit there and walk you through it.
Mm.
And here, you know, being a coach, you and I both are, but to have your doctor sit here and he realizes all that stuff that's happening to your body, a lot of it's connected to stress. He's a great Christian guy.
Yeah.
That's Scott cool. Green, if you're looking for a
physician
or area. Yeah.
In our area. I might be.
He's awesome.
I doubt my physician's listening to this podcast, so I can probably say that publicly.
You probably just go to AI, hey, what's wrong with me? Here it is. Okay.
Here's 17 things. What's it look like?
Right.
It usually comes back and says, looks like you should have spaghetti tonight. So
I don't think that's AI. I think that's you.
That's probably me.
Yeah, that would be you.
Brent, we talked about slowing down in the book. I think we should jump onto that topic today.
Yeah, we were just talking, like, after last week, the microphone, I went back and I was mixing things, and I was distracted, and I was like, man, we didn't want to redo the podcast.
Oh.
But just learn, slowly take your time, move into the next one, and that's kind of where we are today. We said, yeah. What do you want to talk about? And he's like, man, what if we, Kevin goes, let's just talk about where we mentioned Jesus walked at 3 miles an hour.
Yeah, if nothing else, we're authentic, fellas.
Well, and we've been watching The Chosen, as I was telling you that. We just finished all 5 seasons, now we're done. But this topic today about Jesus walking at 3 miles an hour is actually something that you brought to me, which was powerful.
Yeah, at our church, and it's probably been a couple years ago. In fact, a lot of us have shirts that say 3 miles an hour right on them. It's pretty cool. But there's this short film called Godspeed, and it's excellent, by the way. I highly recommend it. It was put together by the Parish Collective in partnership with Matt Canlis. I don't know if you know that name, but fairly popular. He's a Presbyterian pastor.
I think he's kind of short, kind of tall, fat, kind of skinny, long hair,
yeah.
No beard. Is
yeah,
that him?
Yeah, tall, short. All right, that stuff.
I don't know.
He's a good guy, but it follows his journey from his U.S. fast-paced ministry to this small parish in Scotland where he ends up building or approaching it from a much slower relational perspective. And in this film, they talk about this concept of slowing down to the speed of God. So I did some research real fast just to kind of give you some more information because I want to give Matt Canlis and the Parish Collective all the props, but they don't get it. There's a Japanese pastor by the name of, and I don't intend to butcher this, but I might a little bit, Kosuke Koyama, a Japanese theologian, and he coined the term 3 mile an hour God. I just learned that yesterday.
That's cool.
Yeah. But we talk about 3 miles an hour in the book, and I love what you did with it.
You know, so before, you know, I had that doctor's appointment this morning, I get back, and I was like, man, we need to make sure we're kind of zeroed in here. And I thought, you know what? I want to go ahead and make a post. So I did on Facebook about what we were going to be talking about today. And I took a little section, a real small section from the book, because it had such a big impact on me. Now, let me just kind of say something within the book before. I want to read a little bit to you guys. It's only like 2 paragraphs. It's not very long. But one of the things when we were putting this together, excuse me, I said, hey, Kevin.
Go ahead and clear your throat there. I'll put you on mute real
quick.
You don't
mind. Yeah. No, don't worry. They like that. I just won't get, well, oh, I got to clean the mic off.
Give some spittle on there.
Cleaning that mic off. Sorry about that. But as we were talking about this, now I just lost my mind. I totally went, I said, Kevin.
I put the post out this morning.
Put the post out. So let's, in the book, when we talked about Jesus going at 3 mile an hour, I said, we need to really kind of think about what does that look like if all of us could slow down? I realize as I'm approaching my 65th birthday, not too long from now, I've been the person, whenever I go anywhere, I walk pretty fast. If I'm going from the truck into the grocery store, I don't just kind of take my time. I've always been kind of a fast walker. But I'm realizing I'm beginning to slow down. I don't know if that's age, because my body still feels good, or if it's because I don't feel the need to rush everything anymore. Mm. And I think that's more true about what it is. Being a hunter, you know, you don't walk fast in the woods. You take your time because you're noticing everything around you. You have to if you want to be successful. So when we were writing this, I put something in the book in this about, hey, what I want everyone to do as you're going through this section of the book is I want you to take your time. I want you to, maybe from your house, walk a half mile away, a way that you would normally not walk, you would drive, and you miss all that. but walk a half mile, come back to your house, and I want you to kind of document, what did you see? What did you hear? What did you smell? Did you have any communication with anybody? Were you curious about something enough to want to stop and figure out what that was?
Sure.
And we miss that. And I was saying about The Chosen, you know, in watching The Chosen, as Jesus and the disciples are walking everywhere, he's just taking his time. He's healing people. He's listening to them. So here's the beginning that with we'll just kind of call this like the podcast opener.
The teaser.
The teaser. So this is what I had put on Facebook. It says, what if the most powerful thing you do today is to slow down? Jesus walked at 3 miles per hour. Think about that. The Savior of the world, the one with the most important mission in history, never hurried. He wasn't late because he was walking too slow. He was right on time because he was walking at the speed of love. His pace allowed him to notice people that others ignored, stop for interruptions that were actually divine appointments, we talk about that in the book, and respond with compassion instead of rushing past. In our culture, hurry has become a badge of honor. We measure our importance by how busy we are, how much we can cram into our schedule, Kevin, and how fast can we get to the next thing. Mm-hmm. But hurry, now listen, is the enemy of intimacy with God and with others. Walking with Jesus means matching his pace. It means slowing down enough to listen, to notice, to engage. It means being present and not just being productive. The 3 mile pace that Jesus forces us to trust God's timing instead of our own, right? When we walk at his speed, we leave room for the Holy Spirit to interrupt us, to redirect us, and reveal things that we'd never see if we were sprinting through life. It's at this pace that transformation appears. We begin to see people as Jesus sees them. We hear his voice more clearly. We recognize the lies we believed and the truth he's been speaking all along. And this kind of starts to wrap it up here. Maybe the greatest spiritual discipline in our modern world isn't adding another Bible study or serving opportunity. Maybe it's slowing down to walk at the speed of love. Uh-huh. Yeah.
I love that, especially like contrasted with, and I saw this in some of the notes you sent over, like the speed of light. Like here's this creator of light who travels outside of light, faster than light, right? But can travel at the speed of light and chooses to, in his one appearance with us, walk it and act. And I mean, even when the guy's like, hey, my daughter's dead. He's like, okay, like, let's just walk a couple days over there and we'll take care of it when we get there. You know what I mean?
When he sees Lazarus is going to be, there's something wrong. He gets news that something's wrong with Lazarus. And by the time they get there, you know, the sisters are just like, where have you been? He wouldn't be dead. He's like, it's okay. He's just sleeping. Because he knows. You know, it's interesting as I watch that, the lessons that he's teaching everyone, they don't happen fast. And I think about aha moments. You know what I'm talking about? When all of a sudden you get that revelation. Revelation usually doesn't come fast. You just mentioned about God being able to, you know, he can travel faster than the speed of light. He created it. But he can also, if he wants to, travel at the speed of a snail. He created it.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, it's learning to not go so fast because either we're afraid we're going to miss something. And if we go too fast, we probably are missing something.
I find myself doing two specific things where you're talking about. One, I recognize the people that I do this to, and it's my wife and my kids the most, that I hurry them up.
Yeah.
So I can get to, and that's the second thing.
I'll be in the car.
Whatever it is. Yeah, whatever it is. Like, hurry up or tell me your story about work because I got to get to the thing I want to get to. So selfish. I admit it. The other thing is, kind of no matter what it is, even when I'm in the middle of having fun, sometimes I go, like, I want to hurry up and finish this fun so I can get to the next fun.
Right.
Well, that's so stupid because that means I'm no longer enjoying that fun. And what's really ironic about this is inherently I'm lazy. But yet I'm rushing to get to the next thing. Isn't that stupid?
No, I get it. I totally get it.
Like, what a dichotomy of dumbness over here. Like,
I'm learning. You know, there's a funny story. So my friend Brandon, we're hunting down in southern Indiana. He had some property down there. And we would film each other. So we had like a double stand set up, one above the other one. So we get ready, you know, way before dark. We get in there. We're like an hour before the sunlight's going to be coming up. And he's filming me this day. So I'm in the lower stand. He's above me with the camera. it's just starting to get light enough. I realize, you know, I should probably go ahead and get an arrow out and get it knocked. So I take this thing, and as I'm taking the arrow out, I really can't see it. I'm trying to figure out which way my fletchings are turned, because when you knock that on your bowstring, it's got to be turned the right way. And I'm kind of paying attention to that and make sure the knock's going on the string and snapping on completely so it doesn't fall off. And then I take my hand and I run it up the arrow. It's not really light yet, but I'm going to reach up and grab the broadhead and twist it to make sure it's tightened. There's no broadhead. It's a field point.
Field point.
I had a couple of quivers because I like practicing with the actual weight. And we had been shooting the night before back by the barn. And I left that quiver on, didn't even think about it. We get all the way back. You know, we've been in an hour and 20 minutes now. I have to get down. Go all
so
the way
he films
back.
You getting down?
Well, I don't know whether he filmed me or not.
Brent?
Yeah. He just looked at me. He shakes his head. So, you know, here you're trying to be in early. And now what ends up happening? Yeah. Because I was in such a rush, now I have to go out at first light, kick deer out, and then come back in, and then the other deer
again.
Kick out again. Yeah.
Well, hopefully this is the trail where they came back at night.
We'll
sit here all day.
My mom had this, like it was like a little Amish thing on the wall, a little plaque thing. I think it's where she got it. It was Amish country, but it said, "The hurrier I go, the behinder I get."
It's a great quote.
Yeah, and then she had another one said, "We get too soon old and too late smart." That was the other one.
I like that one.
See,
too.
I remember those.
Yeah, a little German action going on. This weekend, we were at PickleCon. That was in Kansas City. I've been married almost 33 years at this point.
Wow.
Yeah, old
How
people.
How old are you?
That's right. And we lived in Kansas City for a while. So my wife and I, we respect a date night, always have. I highly encourage it, men and women. Date night's a very important thing. We have worked to average once a week in the entire 33 years of marriage, which means like 1,650 dates. You think about that.
We do the same thing.
Isn't that great? Well, this week, you know, we're trying to knock all these things out at this convention. And we got a good jump on things, which means we were able to free up a little bit of time, which we were trying to do. We wanted to go on a date at a place we'd gone 30 years ago.
And it was McDonald's, but the only thing left.
Waldo Pizza. And it was still there. Yeah, we actually lived in a little area called Waldo.
So you're on a search.
The Missouri side. Yeah, it was always Waldo? People would say, "Where's Waldo?" And I'd be like, "Oh, it's between this road and this road." And,
oh, okay.
Yeah, so we always know the answer to that question. But they were there, and it was the same pizza we remembered. It's a St. Louis-style pizza, and it was so good.
What does St. Louis-style mean?
It's really thin cracker crust, and then there's this weird cheese mix that they put on that I just really love. It's part mozzarella for sure, but it's also got some pungency to it. So I don't know if that's from a Parmesan or what it's from, but man, it's just tasty.
You guys need to know you're speaking to a chef when he's talking
now.
He is a chef.
It's good. Well, it's good cheese.
Yeah, you have that. Was it a wood fire pizza thing?
Yes, we have a pizza oven in the backyard.
You got to have us over sometime.
Oh, for sure.
We got to have some of that. I've seen you do that.
For sure. It's special. But anyway, I was just saying, like, we intentionally took time out to walk at 3 miles an hour. We lollygagged over there. We shopped at a couple places. We went to eat pizza. We just had a really good time and just chilled. Drove back to the place, and then the next morning, rush again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those moments, sometimes it's really hard to slow down because, like, Stacy and I do that date night, too. I mean, ours is usually Tuesday night. Sometimes we have to move it to Wednesday nights. But it's something you look forward to because it's – you know you're going to slow down. You've cleared your calendar. You don't have an agenda except to be.
Yep.
Yeah. And I think people mistake sometimes, well, you're telling me you just slowed everything down. You're supposed to keep going at 3 miles an hour. Well, there's times when you slow down because he needs you to stop for a moment, but he never says, go ahead and put the car in park and leave it there. You know, you got to keep moving. I think people get lazy because they make the excuse, well, I'm just waiting on God. What's that? What's that story where the guy drowns and he goes to heaven? Like,
oh, he's on top of the roof?
Yes.
They send by a cop when it starts the flood, and then they send by a boat when it gets worse, and then they send by a helicopter. And all three times, it's like, it's okay, God will save me, God will save me, God will save me.
Yeah, and I think so many times, well, whatever that purpose is God has for me, he's going to reveal it, and I'll just sit here and wait on it. And we talk about that in the new book.
We do.
But it's really, yes, you have a plan. But it's that moving wherever God is moving. And we really unpack that a lot in the book.
Well, and so that sort of exposes the other area of my life where when I'm hurrying too much, I'm not doing the things you mentioned before, which is when I'm in a hurry, I'm not listening for God's voice.
Yeah.
Because I'm thinking about all these other things.
It's
and I'm not focused.
You've got.
Yeah, I'm not focused at all on what I should be focused on. zero kingdom building activity going on when I'm hurrying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That, and we've said it before, the Blackaby quote, watch where God is at work and then join him in it. So yeah, I'm kind of taking my time. I wouldn't notice where God was moving so I could join him in it if I have an agenda all the time.
Mm.
I was sitting in Panera Bread. Let me think. This was not The Roar Within. That was my last book. The one before that, Into the Wilds. I was sitting there and I was getting frustrated because people go, oh, hey, they recognize you. Like, you working on a new book? And tell me what it's about. And you're like, I'm trying to write. That's why I have the back booth here. You know, yeah. And you're trying not to even look up sometimes because you just don't want to be interrupted. But I discovered.
Those are possibly customers, Brent.
Well, and so God got a hold of me. He goes, what if this person I'm bringing to you, it's going to be something that's either going to help them that they needed today or it's going to help what you're doing.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, and it was. Here's the funny thing about it. This one guy, I hadn't seen this guy since I was 5 years old. And you're going, you remember that? Yeah. Because I had my eyeball almost knocked out. And it was an attorney from our town. And he comes over and I recognize him. And I just kind of started talking to him. And I said, do you remember holding a little boy 5 years old in Boyertown, Pennsylvania at a camp who had his eye knocked out? And he looks at me and he goes, that was you? I said, I remember you holding me in your lap while my mother drove frantically trying to get us to the hospital. And you actually bought me. Remember those? What were those little pads you could scribble on and then you pull it apart and it would erase it and then you put it back down?
Like someone can etch a sketch, but not quite.
Yeah, but it had like a
sketch
little
you had to shake.
Yeah, these you needed. And I said, I remember you getting that from me. You took the time to hold me the whole way to the hospital. And then the way back, you took the time to get into a little boy's world. I ended up putting that in the book because that was like 400 miles away where that had happened. And I think I wrote Into the Wilds when I was like 55 or something. And so you're looking at 50 years earlier. His impact of taking his time with me and getting into my world was huge. I remembered it. I remembered even what he got me.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
So it made it into the book.
It's amazing what we remember happened. Like that. Like those things that really touch our lives. And they aren't when things are in a hurry.
Yeah, I think it's because we have an agenda. We check the boxes. Oh, I got to check the next box here.
Yeah.
I had a woman yesterday come to me, and she was talking, and she goes, yeah, I've got my to-do list. I got to get done or something. And then she was going on, and I said, well, which one is it? Is it your could-do, should-do, or your must-do? She goes,
I love
what?
It. I love it.
I said, well, there's the could-do. I could do that today. And then there's the should-do. Yeah, I probably better should take care of that, pay that bill, whatever. But then there's the must-do. And we talk about this in the book. Mm. It's that thing that if you don't do, nothing's going to change. And one of those would be walking at 3 miles an hour. You have to slow down.
Yeah. Yeah. Man. Sorry, I don't want to do it. I'm gonna put some effort into it, though, this week, Brent. That's what I'm going to do.
Yeah, my doctor today, I was like, I'm not ready to slow down. He wants me to get a heart scan because of my age. You say everything.
Sure, sure.
You need to get that heart scan. And I'm like, but I don't want to slow down. Don't tell me that kind of stuff.
Yeah, as long as I haven't heard that I have a problem, I'm good to keep going the speed I'm going, right?
Oh, we had our water heater. This guy comes to do like a tune-up, and he goes, now, did I understand that you're supposed to have this drained, your water heater drained? And I said, why? He goes, well, this thing was installed here in 2003, so you're looking at how, and he goes, usually lasts about 6 years. And he said, but if it's not giving you a problem, let's not drain it and mess with it, because that's when problems start. And that's what I was like with the doctor. You don't see something?
Yeah.
Let's not mess with it.
Don't see something, don't say something.
That's not good advice. Go to your doctor. It was important.
That's good advice.
Yeah. Mm. Anyhow. All right, what you got?
Well, I don't actually know how long these usually go.
You know, I would say a minimum of usually like 25 minutes. I used to do these 45 minutes to an hour, but then I started thinking about how long do I listen to a podcast?
Right.
It depends. And have something really powerful to say, or is it just throwing something against the wall and hoping it sticks?
I mean, we're at 24 minutes and 30 seconds.
Yeah, we're just like starting.
I feel like he's at 25 to 30. I feel like I should like be giving you like hand signals over here.
I'm controlling the
board. You never know, that might not last for another week or two. We'll see how the sound comes out this week.
So when you think about your life, let me just kind of throw some stuff out. When you think about what does it take for you? A person who really is driven and busy all the time, what does it take for you to slow down?
Well,
outside of a physical ailment,
I was going to say sometimes it is a physical ailment, and I think maybe the Lord bestows that on me, so I will lay on the couch and not try to get all the things done.
Right.
Yeah, it takes focus.
Intentionality.
Uh-huh. Yeah. You know, I think some people instinctively and intuitively know when it's time to slow down, and they do. Others like me, it has to be intentional. Like, I have to make the choice.
Does it come sometimes from hearing others saying, hey, I need some of your time?
No.
Or like, really?
I don't think so.
No, I get that. Stacey's like...
Because I just build that in. I mean, but I give them as little as I can.
You're really good. One thing about you is, even though I know you've got a million things going on, you're really good at looking a person in the eye and being able to connect and then go back to what you're doing. That's a gift. That is, because it's hard to do that.
Brent, I read once that there was this huge study done, and they said, when you get distracted, you know, somebody comes in and interrupts you, it takes 7 full minutes for your brain to get back to where you were as focused before the interruption.
Yep.
Then I started counting how many interruptions I had, multiplied it by 7, and said, no wonder I'm not getting anything done.
Yeah.
And so I changed my approach to how that interruption stuff worked for me. And I mean, it worked for me, but I'm not saying it worked for everybody else, but I keep brief the conversation, and the entire time I continue to remind myself what I was doing. So I'm not proud of that.
Stacy will say to me sometimes, she'll say, babe, can we like leave our phones in the truck tonight when we go in to get dinner? Because we don't need any distractions. I want to make sure that we really connect, you know, of course, spiritually and emotionally and all that stuff. Because even you think about, for women, it's very difficult for a woman to connect on the physical side of things unless there's the emotional or the spiritual side. And I think, guys, we just kind of want to rush to this other stuff, right?
We're microwaves.
Yeah.
They're crock pots.
That's exactly right.
It doesn't
right.
have to be just sex.
That's right. And I shall say, sometimes even when we are sitting in here, I can see your wheels turning. You're like thinking about... You want to say it, but maybe you won't. Like, hey, what's the next podcast going to be? What's the new chapter in the book? Speaking events, wherever you book something, what are your dreams or visions? She says, sometimes I need to know that I matter more than those things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a good lesson for me was about 2 weeks ago. And our 16-year-old, you know, life is busy for her right now. It's been really busy. It was the end of the summer. She has got a new job. All these things were happening. And she was going through a rough day. And I could hear the tears. And I was in my office, and I was working on the new book stuff that we were just pitching to the publisher. And I was like, oh, not right now. You know, I was so deep in thought. And finally, I realized, what's the most important thing right now? She's crying. And, well, she's a teenager. She's going to cry. She cries out. No, you need to go and take some time. I went in, and she was sitting on the floor, and the tears were pouring down her face. And of course, with the mascara, and they were black, and there were eyelashes that from rubbing, they had kind of were stuck to her cheek, and they're black. And I just sat down across from her. And as I was sitting there, and I just kind of reached over, and her hands were on her lap, and I took her hands, and I looked at her, and I just said, tell me what's going on. Yeah. I said, I'm not going to try to tell you what to do. I'm not going to try to fix you. Just tell me what's going on. I know it's important to be there. And as she, this probably is 15 minutes long, and I kept reaching up, and the tears kept coming, and I would just reach out with my thumb, and I would just kind of wipe the next one away. And there's something powerful about when you meet someone in that moment like Jesus did, when they're really hurting. There's grief. When we have tears, it could be anger, but remember, anger and grief are closely related. And so she told me later, just me sitting there with her and catching those tears. Scripture talks about that. That God captures our tears, right? He knows every one of them. He bottled them up, it says in Revelation. And that's, I didn't even know what I was doing. I stopped what was important to me and made her important. And that's what we're talking about today. Learning to walk at this 3 mile an hour, what is the most important thing? Because if we're going too fast, we're going to miss it.
Yeah. She might be on a podcast 50 years from now saying, I remember when my dad, I'll tell you, I think the last thought I had on this, our culture, you kind of intimated this earlier, it's an on-demand culture. We are expecting everything instantly. And we now have ChatGPT to help us get there.
Oh, and we tell our kids, hey, it's time for dinner, and they run to the car.
Oh, I mean, it's crazy.
There's your microwave society.
Yeah. But, you know, we waited until 7 p.m. on a Friday night to watch Dukes of Hazzard when we were kids. So You know, now it's like, pull it up on whatever.
What did you watch when you got home from school? Now, I don't know whether you had to have your homework done first, but was there a show that you just couldn't wait to?
No, we went out and played football immediately after school.
Oh, mine was Gilligan's Island.
I love Gilligan's Island, but I would watch it later.
I would watch because it was on the second I got home when I watched Gilligan's Island, and then I was in the woods. You wouldn't find me.
You're a lot older than me. It wasn't on at that time of day. High school.
Gilligan wasn't even on yet. He wasn't even here.
First season was black and white. I believe the next two seasons were in color.
Well, it was around, 1963?
And there were only three seasons, but it feels like there were 100.
I think I used to be able to quote every single episode. I would lay in the back seat of my parents' car when we were on a trip, and I would close my eyes, and I'd watch the episode in my head.
This is hilarious because what's your favorite episode of them all?
Oh, gosh, there's so many. I think one of them, my favorite, would be the Japanese soldier in the submarine.
Yeah, that's a good one, yeah. Mine was when those beets and other seeds rolled up on the shore.
Yeah.
I think about Mrs. Howell.
Okay, let me think.
She was not operating at 3 miles an hour.
Yeah. Good. I'm trying to think. She had
sugar beets.
Sugar beets. And Gilligan had spinach.
Oh, yeah. He could lift,
That log and everything.
Yes.
Marianne had the eyesight. She had carrots.
Yep.
Wow. See, you're not that much.
We're not that much different, you and I. All right, brother.
Island, just sit right back and you hear a tale.
Tale of a fellowship.
Fateful trip.
It is a trip, not a ship. It started
Port aboard this tiny ship.
There's the ship.
The mate.
He was a mighty sailor, man.
The skipper.
Brave and sure. I was going to say true.
What was the difference between the first one and then when they changed the theme song for the second one?
They added in Marianne and the professor in the images.
Professor and Marianne. And the other one was, and the rest.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah. Wow. Huh. Going back.
So... Why don't you wrap us up?
Oh,
yeah. Let's challenge our group.
I'm just thinking this is just taking me back because you said it when you got home. You were outside. You weren't in the park.
Saturday morning, I can tell you what I watched, but after school, we were like, who are we playing football in whose backyard?
Yeah, because Saturday morning was probably more like Scooby-Doo,
Shaggy, Ruh-roh, Shaggy.
And then the Jetsons.
Nope. Never got into that one.
The Jetsons, their theme song, dude.
Yeah, whatever.
It was
good.
It kicked.
I just didn't. I hated the show. I thought it was stupid.
Yeah, the show was kind of weird, but their theme song.
I could watch Scooby-Doo all day long.
Dark Shadows when I was a kid.
Justice League also.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about
that. I love me some Justice League.
You know, one of my favorites would have been, what was it? Bannon and West and Haji and Bandit and, what was that show?
When you say West, I hear Batman. That's what I hear.
No, you're thinking
Adam West.
No, what was the one? Johnny Quest.
Oh, see, I didn't do that one either.
Oh, that was... See, that's what got me in the woods, because it was all about adventure. They were always taking an adventure. That show probably had one of the biggest impacts on my life to do what I do now, traveling the world and doing crazy stuff.
That's cool.
Yeah.
For my kids now, it was Backyardigans.
I don't think I ever saw
it. It would have been like, you know, your Johnny Quest.
Huh, Backyardigans?
I loved watching it.
I never even heard of it.
Or Phineas and Ferb.
Yeah, I've heard of Phineas and Ferb.
I will watch that in a hotel room by myself.
Okay, well.
It's good stuff.
This is getting strange.
It's good stuff, Dr. Doofenshmirtz.
Phineas and Ferb.
Yeah.
Yeah, my kids did watch that.
That's when I slow down to 3 miles an hour and I'm ready to...
We used to always on trips, we would do Name That Tune. Oh. And I would say, okay, here's a TV show. You have to give me the theme song. Like, I Love Lucy. But that's like 3 mile an hour. We'd be on trips and we would interact. That you don't have to be walking. When we say taking life at 3 miles
an hour. Yeah. It's back to matching God's stride.
And now everybody's on their phone or their iPad. That's not what we're trying to get you to do.
Unless you're reading the word.
You always have to like do that, don't you?
I do.
You're mean.
I am.
But anyhow, yeah, kind of bringing this back down. I think the whole thing with this is, just like when I was talking about the arrows, you know, I rushed it the night before and I get out there. We're going to miss it. We're going to miss some of those opportunities if we don't listen for the Holy Spirit's voice, because the agenda that he has for our life, if we're willing to listen to him and follow him, is so much bigger than anything we can ever dream or imagine. He's got a purpose for your life. So let me just kind of end this with I do in so many times, because I think that man who does walk at 3 miles an hour, he is secure in himself and trust God enough to know that when a man knows who he is in Christ, that he's been created in the image of the living God, when he is no longer held captive by the opinions of others or cares whether he lives or dies, that man is now extremely dangerous dangerous for good because he's been unleashed. We just want to encourage you as we kind of wrap it up today. Jesus walked at 3 miles an hour. Don't miss it. We'll see you next time.